back to the quotes. On June the 1st, the chief of police dismissed this suit. And you want to do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. And then on June the 4th, he called back the news people and said, we have to have 4 more days to investigate this. They thought it was a verbal or clerical error. And he called back on June the 4th at press conference and said they'd have to go into Mrs. Blair's claims a little further.
You're listening to Dialogue Assassination with Mae Bressel. This is KLRB Stereo FM, Carmel by the Sea.
June the 4th, the Los Angeles Police Department said that they would have to probe the charges of Mrs. Blair. May 28th, she made her accusations against the criminals in the police department. June 1st, she was put down. On June 4th, they announced that they would have to probe, and they would need 2 weeks to see if evidence was tampered, like she said it was, And on June 24th, the chief of police in Los Angeles postponed again an announcement on what happened with the tampering of evidence in these murders. And she particularly is talking about the Sirhan Sirhan. They postponed it to July the 6th. But July the 2nd, the chief investigators in Los Angeles again postponed a news conference. And this time they said, we'll have to do it indefinitely. I told you there was a blackout down there. And when they were pressed for an explanation of why this was put off indefinitely from May the 28th, now July the 2nd, they said that their office was terribly concerned that evidence in the Sirhan trial, the fatal bullets and the murder weapon, were tampered with. And they couldn't finish the investigation of Mrs. Blair's charges until they probed further into the crucial exhibits that were contaminated and to what degree they were contaminated. Well, last Wednesday, this is in August, they announced that they'd have to have a grand jury investigation. And the grand jury, they said there is evidence that the exhibits were so carelessly handled by the county clerk's office that they would be useless in future court action for Sirhan's appeal of the death sentence. They would also be useless in determining the truth or falsity of her allegations, which imply then that a second gunman may have been Kennedy's real murderer because the other gun has been thrown away, and that Sirhan has been condemned for killing somebody that he maybe didn't murder. So Wolfer, who was expected by July 1st to have his appointment as head of the crime lab, has filed a suit and he against Ms. Blair, but the thing was at a standoff. In the meanwhile, county clerk William Sharp, whose office was accused by Bush of ignoring the orders to not allow anyone to see this evidence, has information that 13 unauthorized persons were in to see the murder evidence, the bullet, and the guns. The Blair case remains a standoff for more than 2 months. I'm reading the Los Angeles Times, when they expected to lay it to rest. But in a sense, the Blair-Wolfer controversy is merely a salad, while the entree involves deeper questions in themselves, not touched by Mrs. Blair, but voiced by at least 2 John Does with her in the suit. Mrs. Blair claims that the private ballistic investigation of criminalist William Harper of Pasadena, he's been there for 35 years, he's worked on local trials, and his work served to support a court action. This is the suit that I talked about with the Chief of Police Davis and our Attorney General of the state. This work supports a court action that directly tackles the second gunman theory. The suit was laid on June 25th by Godfrey Isaac on behalf of a freelance writer, Theodore Chirac. He charges that city officials deliberately suppressed certain evidence in the Kennedy slaying and covered up inadequacies in the original investigation. The Times has learned that ever since the question of possible tampering with the Kennedy evidence, they have continued to question persons who had nothing to do with the exhibits or the evidence. Some of these names were brought into the Kennedy case by Chirac, who for 3 years told another version of the events of 1968. And I'm going on with the Los Angeles Times article, but I want to say something at this point. Remember that Evel Younger is saying there was a difference between witnesses before the jury whose stories, maybe some of them, weren't exactly right. I'm talking about people that never were heard before the jury. Now we're going into the John Does. There was another version on June 5th, 1968. One is former KNXT television newsman Donald Shulman, who witnessed Kennedy's assassination and told of seeing another person fire a weapon in the pantry, but who, oddly, was briefly questioned only once in the month leading to the Syrian trial and was never called as a witness. Now, these end quotes for 1 minute. This is serious because we have been told in the state of California that this 23-man force would see 10,000 people if necessary. And here's a man for 3 years who saw somebody pull a gun and wanted to be called and was not called as a witness. I'm going back to the Los Angeles article now. Quote, his first intensive interview with any investigative agency was July 23rd of this year. Another belated witness was Chirac, who told the Times, if it's true the district attorney can't make decisions on the Blair thing until this tampering is questioned, why are they still following this other track? The whole thing is tampering is a red herring. It is Chirac who 3 years ago began a personal crusade that led to the present investigation tangle over what to most people they thought was an open and shut political murder case. Chirac, a native of Winnipeg, said that they overlooked a second gunman who actually fired the fatal bullet using Sirhan's first two pistol shots as the cover for his own fire. The nation was tired of conspiracy theories on the wake of Garrison and the John Kennedy assassination, and they were glad to have the story they dismissed as another new breed of conspiratorial demonologists who were sincere but misguided. See, this is how I was put down when I said there was a conspiracy. Chirac admits that he gets emotional and even obsessive, but he says, look, I'm proud of my work and I want the truth to come out, whatever it is. The American people aren't going to get anything more than the official version until a few more questions are asked, and asked by the right people, people influential enough to demand the answers. On June the 4th, 1968, Chirac was a freelance writer writing a documentary on the Kennedy campaign, and he was following his victory speech, and he went through the crowded ballroom, and it was swamped, and he was crushed behind the podium, and he was outside the pantry. And there was a little popping noise. It sounded like firecrackers. And then a security guard slipped out the swinging doors to keep the ballroom crowd from bursting into the bloody pantry. And in the chaotic hours following the shooting, Shulman, now 28, the newsman from KNXT, was quoted as saying he saw a security guard fire his weapon. The newscaster Jerry Dunney broadcast that Shulman told him Kennedy's bodyguards fired back the suspect, and he was shot in the leg. Shulman's account was carried worldwide by the United Press at the time. He repeated his interview with Jeff Brent, general manager of Continental News Service. A week later, he told his story to the police, and it was never followed up. You can imagine Mae Brussel calling from Carmel, California. I'm going off the quote now for a minute, Gloria. Calling from Carmel and saying, look, there's a conspiracy down there. I want to tell you who did it. Here's a man in the Ambassador Hotel who sees somebody shoot Robert Kennedy from the back of the head, and he's not called as a witness. How frustrating it would be to live in Los Angeles and be in the Ambassador and see it and have a trial and see the police department for 3 years cover this up, and then see the man who covered it up become the Attorney General of the state of California and scream law and order to the hippies and the communes and the kids, you know, and the radicals at Stanford and Berkeley when he had all of this, and the police told me he was carrying all this evidence of conspiracy in his office. How frustrating to be an ambassador and see someone shoot Robert Kennedy and not be allowed to be called as a witness. And I'm writing a letter here. They won't let me. You imagine how Mr. Shulman felt. Back to the Los Angeles Times. About a week later, he told his story, and it was never followed up. From that day until July 23rd, 1971, Shulman was never heard publicly again. But Chirac found him, and Chirac, because he was the ambassador that night, Chirac found him, and he talked to Brent, and he traced down Shulman, who evidently then believed that the bodyguard who fired at Sirhan was firing at Sirhan, rather at Kennedy. At the time, they thought the bodyguard was shooting back. But Chirac also talked with Carl Uecker, the ambassador maitre d', who was leading Kennedy, his left hand through his right, through the narrow pantry. And Uecker insists to this day that Sirhan fired his first two shots from Uecker's right side and in front of Kennedy, and that he got Sirhan in a tight headlock after the second shot. And Sirhan never got near enough to Kennedy to inflict the near point blank, upward traveling, back to front, head wound that killed him. And this confirms the autopsy of Noguchi, 1 inch from the back of the head. In Sirian's trial, the jury was told that Uecker probably miscounted. You see, there are about 8 bullets around there, stopping Sirian after the 4th. Uecker says today he was not mistaken, that Sirian was captive after the 2nd shot and too far away in any case on the 1st 2. Then Chirac went after the bodyguard. Kennedy, a fatalist about possible danger, traveled with one professional security man, William Barry, a close friend and former FBI. Now I'm ending the quote here to make a comment, Gloria. In Robert Kaiser's book, RFK Must Die, he makes a very innocent remark, and this is why I'm anxious for Kaiser to come out next week to talk about conspiracies. Kaiser goes into the two men hired to guard Robert Kennedy, and one of them was William Barry. Now the night they went from the pantry into the room to speak to the people, Ethel Kennedy, not conspiratorial mind, and certainly not knowing that they would be killed, but always cautious, noted that Barry, who was to protect Robert Kennedy, wasn't with Robert Kennedy at all. He was to be in front of him and protect him. He's an ex-FBI man. And Ethel Kennedy said to him, according to Robert Kaiser, and it was an innocent comment of Kaiser's, but I picked it up immediately, Barry, you're not to be with me. You're supposed to be guarding Robert. He was behind the lines holding the arm of Ethel. And Ethel, sensing evidently a danger because he's not guarding her husband at all, said, you know, don't take my arm. You're up there with Bob. And when the guns get off, Barry was with Ethel. He was not with Robert Kennedy. And this is what my observation, why was Barry not front man with Bobby? And because he's FBI, I have to see what position he's anyway, because I suspect this particular organization, and with good reason. The Los Angeles Times goes on that Robert Barry was one professional security man. May saying he was with Ethel, wasn't with Bob. Then they say, to protect itself, the ambassador hired extra guards on its own that night from the Ace Guard Service. There were 7 men moonlighting after their daytime jobs who provided their own uniforms, insignia, and sidearms, end quote. Interrupt. I tell you that the man who's named in the suit down in Los Angeles that killed Robert Kennedy, a Mr. Caesar, was hired by the Ace Guard Service. This is what the LA Times is saying. But this man also was a plumber at Lockheed. He worked at Lockheed Aircraft. And in my cross-filing system, anyone who's involved in any of these assassinations that is employed in government positions like that, they call him a maintenance man. The maintenance man at Lockheed, can you just see him fixing the tools and pipes and cars and, you know, various things, and then saying, oh, you are the man in charge of the life of Senator Robert Kennedy in Los Angeles. The maintenance man from Lockheed came home and arrived about 5 minutes late, and there was a message at the home. He was totally breathless. Get on up there tonight. You're going to moonlight at the ambassador. It seems to me that any guard that would be guarding Robert Kennedy at that point should have been hired just about a week ago, because the victory night, or even the defeat night if he didn't win it, he would be in there with a group of people at a set place at a set time, because you have to hire the rooms and rent them, and you know whether he's going to be at the Hilton in Beverly Hills or the Beverly Hills Hotel, the ambassador. So if he has a guard, it doesn't seem you hire him at 6 o'clock that night and say, get on over there, boy, at 8 o'clock. He's come home, and his wife says, there's a message. You're to be responsible for the life of Senator Kennedy tonight after being the maintenance man all day. Okay, we won't have time. I go on these side stories, but I have to interpret. The LA Times is telling you something, and then the quote goes on. Then Chirac went after the bodyguard, this particular body. He goes into the bodyguard. One was assigned in the pantry and was outside the swinging doors, and when Uecker and Kennedy burst in, the guard fell in with him and behind Uecker and Kennedy and slightly to the right, where the bullet was to come later. In the days following Kennedy's death, the guard was interviewed by the police and FBI, and he said that when the shooting began, he was knocked down backwards. This is the guard for Robert Kennedy. When the gun went off, he fell down on the floor, and he never saw the gunman's face or anything about him. But he said he never saw the gunman's face, only an arm and a pistol. But his account conflicted slightly every time on the point of whether he went with his gun or actually ever got it out of the holster. Once he said he drew his gun.
Another time he said, I reached for mine and it was too late. And one official noted, that guy's story doesn't jive. He tells conflicting accounts, and it seems obvious he hadn't really seen anything, and he really had nothing to tell us. And because of the variances in the guard's story, they dropped any further questioning. His credibility was questioned by officials who felt that he was trying to inject himself into a sensational case and really knew little about it. There is no record or any effort made or any thought entertained to determine whether those variances came from his effort to conceal something rather than his just fabricating, and his gun was never examined, and the subject never came up in Los Angeles. The fact that he gave so many discrepancies wasn't reason to examine him. Evelyn Younger threw him out, and Chief of Police Davis and Evelyn Younger tell you this was the most inclusive study in justice that was ever done in the United States. Whatever might be said of this, in the light of the present controversy 3 years later, it should be remembered that Sirhan, after all, had been captured on the very act of firing. And the days and weeks after his capture, there was no substantial evidence that he was anything but a loner, bent on motives solely his own. Now, the Los Angeles Times says in the first days after his capture, there was no evidence. Jerry Cohn, writing for the Los Angeles Times, I'm sorry, says there was no evidence of the motives. I called Jerry Cohn at the Los Angeles Times, who was covering this thing, and said, I want to talk to you as a researcher. And he put me off. Everybody who comes with evidence, they put them off. They don't want you to tell them. So Jerry Cohn can write now in 1971 and tell you that at that time there wasn't any other problems or questions. When I call him, he wouldn't see me, and he hasn't seen me on any of these cases. Back to the article. It says, in the investigation special unit, Senator Chief of Detectives Robert Yoten wrote about the event and said, in July 1969, I held a special unit senator meeting asking 10 questions to the absolute possibility of any person with right-wing connections being in the kitchen or pantry. This is the Chief of Detectives in Los Angeles investigating and asked if there was any chance that anyone with right-wing connections was in the pantry, and within a week all of them had been answered satisfactorily. Yoten concedes to date but says he does not believe that his information may have been incomplete, but he certainly missed one, and that was a security guard who was dismissed and forgotten long before the case. Now, in the case of the security guard, Chirac found him living in San Fernando Valley a year later. And he made no bones about his political belief. He said he supported Governor Wallace from Alabama for president. He hated the Kennedy family. And he hated black people, and a black race war was imminent. This is what he's saying. And the chief of detectives is telling you none of these people were in the ambassador at that time. The guard said he did have a .22 caliber pistol the night that Sirhan was shot. And later he said he sold the gun to a friend. He said he had drawn his gun that night, but he was only acting out his motions. Chirac was convinced that the whole story had not been told about the night that Kennedy died, and he began to document his findings in an alternate theory of the assassination, collaborating with French journalist Gerard Alcan in a documentary movie called Who Killed Robert Kennedy. And nearly a year, his theory was dismissed as a fabric of coincidence and stretch possibility, and the public officials refused to give him any kind of an interview. In July 1970, Chirac put his theory before Grant Cooper, who was the counsel for Sirhan, and referred to the ballistic expert Harper, who he knew professionally for years. And they passed on an informal checking of the ballistic information, talking about what came up at the time of the trial. Mr. Harper, who lives in Pasadena and has worked on these many cases, had begun his work after he read Robert Yoten's book on the assassination of Robert Kennedy, and he noticed apparent inconsistencies over a slug too large to have come from Sirhan's small revolver. Now, I'm going to end that quote for 1 minute, Gloria, to tell you that we're getting into ballistics now, and we're going to go back to the letter of Evelyn Younger, the Attorney General of the state, that says a few witnesses disagreed with each other. Here is this ballistic man in Pasadena doing his work, and this is why these blanket defenses of themselves in those departments won't work anymore. Mr. Harper said that this slug did not fit Sirhan's revolver. In the first of what was many visits to the criminal exhibit section of the county clerk's office, Harper found that the large slug was a merely flattened .22 bullet. And he found other things. And after many months of testing and weighing and micrographing and comparing the actual bullets with the test slugs fired later by Wolfer, as studying coroner Thomas Noguchi's massive autopsy report on Mr. Kennedy, Harper developed these essential criticisms of Wolfer's work, and hence this was the foundation of the, this is what he found as the stone of the official investigation. At least two of the bullets removed from the pantry, one from Kennedy's body and one from ABC newsman William Weisel, do not match each other and could not have been fired by the same gun. Bullets from the same gun will have matching individual characteristics, while bullets from two guns of the same make will match only in class characteristics. And the absence on the tool bullets of any phase marks, usually the investigator initials, and serves as guideposts to line them up, and these do not match. He said there is a difference of 14% in the rifling angles of the two bullets, again pointing to the conclusion they came from different guns. Then he goes on to the third point. While the bullets don't match each other, neither does either one match any of the three bullets contained in an envelope, Exhibit 55, that purports to contain three test bullets fired from Sirhan's gun after his arrest. The serial number was given H18602. The serial number of Sirhan's gun was H53725. Wolfer later explained that the second gun, H18602, was borrowed from the county clerk's criminal evidence section from a group of guns stated that were planned to be destroyed as old evidence weapons, and Wolfer said he borrowed it. Dwayne Wolfer, the criminalist, at the trial of Sirhan, used the gun that was later to be thrown away, and in the trial, he said he borrowed it on June 10, 1960, at the time when Sirhan's gun was before the grand jury, and it wasn't accessible to him without a court order. But the evidence slip on Exhibit 55, containing three bullets fired from it, states in Wolfer's handwriting that H18602 was test fired June 6th, the very day that Kennedy died, and Sirhan's gun did not come before a grand jury exhibit until June the 7th. There actually are no test bullets in evidence fired from Sirhan's own gun, registered H53725, only the test slugs that have now, from the now destroyed borrowed gun. Now, Mr. Harper claims at the Sirhan trial it was concluded that Union leader Paul Schrade, who was behind Kennedy, was hit in the forehead by a bullet that went through the shoulder pad of Kennedy's coat. That would have been a westbound shot from in front of the two men. The lab analysis of Kennedy's coat revealed that the hole through the shoulder head was a back-to-front eastbound shot, as Wolfer himself testified, with the bullet lodging in the ceiling and never recovered. Weighing of the remaining bullet fragments taken from Kennedy and the five wounded accounts satisfy eight separate bullets, as many as Sirhan's gun could have fired, but leave out a possible ninth that is unrecovered eastbound bullet that went through Kennedy's shoulder pad. The implications of Harper's investigation are unsettling to law enforcement officials who sincerely believe that they had an airtight prosecution signed, sealed, and delivered in the Kennedy case, with none of the nagging questions that attended the Garrison probe of President Kennedy's death. But Harper's work, individually, as a criminologist, as a gun expert, was gratifying to Schirach, because after 2 years, he found himself regarded as a crank, and now to support his theory with the scientific support. I'm going on to finish this quotation, but I want to say that I don't mind being called a crank by these people, because scientific evidence will back all of us. It just boomerangs to them. They'll look sillier as time goes on. One more paragraph here from the Los Angeles Times. Harper wrote to Mr. Schirach, multiple gun shootings are not a rarity in police work. The capture of Sirhan with his gun at the scene resulted in a total mesmerization of the investigative effort. The well-established teachings of criminalistics and forensic pathology were cast aside and bypassed because it was an expedient solution and an erroneous oversimplification. We're going to go into Ruby shooting Oswald. I think Oswald also was shot from the back because of the autopsy, and we've gone into either it's the second Oswald that was killed, or Ruby, who claims he didn't kill him, shot from the front too, and Oswald was shot from the back, but to make sure he was dead by the other police department. We'll go into his autopsy, Oswald's autopsy, because scientists have gone into that too. And it doesn't look like those. You get a gunman in front, like Ruby and Sarah, and they shoot two, and then you say, wow, they did it. And the police department says, well, you all saw it. I mean, you know, 100 million people saw it. How can you deny? And in Los Angeles, they're saying there was an expedient solution, oversimplification. And now they have this suit going on that will continue to go, and they're pressing for an investigation. And Mr. Sharrock and Mr. Harper will work very hard to get the appeal of Sirhan, and Godfrey Isaac has gone to be the attorney of Sirhan now, because his original attorney, Luke McKissick, didn't go along for a whole year on this, and Sirhan has taken on Godfrey Isaac as his attorney, so McKissick refuses to be fired, so now they have two. Mrs. Blair's attack on Wolfer remains in limbo. He has not been appointed head of the criminology department in Los Angeles yet. It is shadowed by a grand jury investigation into the tampering of the evidence. The exhibits are badly messed up. Further investigation is almost impossible. And the grand jury just last week said, we don't know if we'll get the truth. There is so much tampering. Now the bullet, the coat of Robert Kennedy, pages from Sirhan's diary have been ripped off. We're going to the grand jury met since this article was out. And they're scolding the bookkeepers down there for ripping out pages of the diary, tampering with Robert Kennedy's clothes. The gun is missing. The bullets are tampered with. That is a long hour. I think we have to sometimes spend 1 hour and not jump around to go into something, because as we get more scholarly and academic on one subject, Gloria, then we can go 1 hour on Chappaquiddick maybe and one on Manson. And you barely touch the subject, but I think everyone listening should appreciate some of these facts and keep getting your pencil for next week and try hard to understand what's happening.
Right. We only got through half of what we had planned to do this morning, but that's something that should, I think, be brought up, the article in the Times.
Yeah.
You did want to read 70 hours and 30 minutes, but
next week we'll do that.
Yes. It's just we're
really
out of time
during the week. I would love to read that book to people who don't have it. I think they'd enjoy it.
I would love to read it. All right, Mae. Well, we'll be back again next week at this time and try to finish what we started this morning. It's marvelous. Thank you.